Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Dev to Dev, the podcast about everyday video game developers and why they do what they do every day. I'm Alex Solman, ready for another conversation with a former colleague and friend. I got it the right way around. If you've listened to last week's episode, that will make you giggle, hopefully. Zach, would you like to introduce yourself?
My name's Zach Markham. I'm a senior software engineer. Been working in the games industry for about 6 years now, before that doing some other engineering pieces. But yeah, feels still quite early in that kind of games industry career path.
Yeah, which is why I'm excited to dig into this, Zach, because I think you've got a really interesting career, you know, that's still forming, like you said, and, you know, but still got some really interesting history. So, and yeah, we've worked together for a while, and I feel like we know each other, but as we're always with these conversations, I feel like, you know, there's more to learn and more to dig into. So, so as always, my favorite question to start things, what first inspired you about video games?
So my earliest memories of playing video games is on the SNES. I have like very vivid memories of playing that with my brother, having the Super Mario All-Stars cartridge, which was like multiple games on one cartridge. It had like Mario World, Mario 3, a couple of other ones, that and A Link to the Past. And yeah, just spending a lot of time just seeing if I can get like a little bit further and a little bit further and a little bit further. Games were like very competitive for me. It was always kind of like either competing against myself or competing against my brother. And we'd sort of like take it on those single player games, we'd kind of like take it in turns. And I always kind of found it difficult to watch someone else play because I was always like, oh, you know, you need to jump at that point. Oh, you did that wrong. Like, I can do that better. Like, give me the controller back. And yeah, it was always just like pushing each other, see how far we can get. And yeah, I was the older brother, so it was always a case of my brother had to be Luigi, had to be player two. Yeah, very much like a competitive thing in the early days. And then yeah, that sort of like was a thread that carried on throughout all the kind of console generations and stuff. We both played a lot of like GoldenEye, and played loads of Mario Kart, lots of things that were like we play in the same room together, like couch co-op sort of things, or I guess not co-op, more competitive, but yeah, a lot of playing against each other for ages. That continued with Halo. So I went to a friend's house. My mum went on a holiday. And she went on holiday for like a week to Spain. And I was still at school at this point. And my brother got shipped off to an aunt's house. And I got sent to my best friend's house at the time, which was like amazing. I got to spend a week with my best friend. I think I took my Dreamcast with me, and he had an Xbox, the original Xbox, that I'd never played before. And he introduced me to Halo for the first time. And that was it. We spent the entire week playing that. Every hour we could get, we played Halo. We played the campaign through like so many times, just like increasing the difficulty like bit by bit until we were like doing it on Legendary. And then just doing those kind of like daft multiplayer sessions where it's like, right, let's do a 1v1, but you're only allowed to use pistols, or let's do a 1v1 and you're only allowed to use like the worst weapon we can find in the game. Spent ages doing that. And that really formed a real loyalty to like Bungie and the Halo series. I basically went home from that week of playing that and was like, I need to get an Xbox straight away. Got an Xbox, got Halo, introduced my brother to it. And then we used to play that all the time. And then when Halo 2 came out, we were both addicted to that, especially like the, like I said, like being competitive, addicted to like the ranking systems. He was always sort of slightly better than me. I'm pretty much across the board on every game mode. They'd always be like one level ahead of me, which was super frustrating. And yeah, a lot of competition, a lot of Halo. That basically continued into like Destiny when that came out. It was like, that is my kind of one. I think a lot of games now are sort of like, those kind of live service games are kind of like jobs. And that was like, that is my one job game. I'm not going to forget any other game that's like a similar live service game. That is the one. I kind of like stuck with that. And yeah, the loot grind really grabbed me on that. Was very into that sort of process of there was the kind of the element of like getting better at things and like doing raids and doing PvP and stuff and slowly improving and optimizing like your play style. And yeah, I think the thing that really inspired me to get into the industry or want to get into the industry was when Halo 2 was about to be released. I remember getting the Steelbook for that. I was a sucker for all those like limited editions and collector's editions. I couldn't quite get the like the Halo 3 Master Chief helmet, but I got the Halo 2 Steelbook. And I remember that came with like the video diaries, like documentaries of like the devs and stuff. I remember being so absorbed by those and watching those and seeing like all the devs like in the office with all the sort of like figurines and things on their desks and things, and just seeing how the concept art gets created. And just seeing an environment where everyone's talking about games like really passionately. And I was like, that's what I want to do. That kind of was a real sort of inflection point where I was like, didn't really have an idea what I wanted to do before that. But after seeing that, I was like, that is it. I want to make games for a living. But it never really felt, I think a few people have said this, it never really felt kind of possible at the time. And my mum was very much like, you need to sort of get a proper job. You need to do like real kind of courses. So I did like maths and computing and media studies and business at college, which was supposed to be kind of like a broad thing of like computers were getting like bigger then. So it was like, this is kind of like a broad spectrum of things that you can come out of college and you'll have like a huge like array of options if you want to go to university. So I did all those courses. And then when it came around to choosing like what to do at university and stuff, I remember seeing that games computing was an option. And I was like, I hadn't really planned for that, but that'd be something that I'd really like to do. And then those courses, they sort of had a list of like, these are the A levels you need to do that course. And all the A levels that I'd done happened to be the exact like fit for that course. I was like, oh, this is perfect. I can go do games computing. So yeah, went and did that. And yeah.
So that's around 2007, yeah, where you went to university.
Yeah, 2007 to uni. Yeah.
So where was this happening? Where did you grow up?
So I grew up in a little town called Immingham, which is near Grimsby, which for anyone listening from the UK will know that that's kind of it's one of those places that often appears in these sort of frivolous like, oh, top 10 worst places to live in the country sort of thing. It's like very sort of like a hardworking fishing port, not sort of up to date with sort of like tech trends or anything like that. The place, the town Immingham that I grew up was super small. It was like it had one library, one school, a couple of pubs, and that was it. Really, really quiet town. And yeah, when I went to uni, we moved to Lincoln, which is slightly bigger, but still like when I finished my degree, it never really felt like I could get into the games industry in Lincoln. It was always like I probably have to go to London or Manchester or something like that. But I wasn't at a point in life where we wanted to move away. So it kind of got to a point where I was like, I want to do games dev, but I don't really want to leave Lincoln. And Lincoln is still a really small city, but compared to Immingham where I grew up, it was kind of huge. So it was like that was already kind of a big step for me. And moving to somewhere like London, I was like, I don't want to do that. But going back to where I sort of grew up, yeah, I had like a few friend groups, and I always sort of had to split my interests amongst the friend groups. So there was like I had some friends that were like super into football and other friends that were into games, and that's kind of how it's been sort of forever. And you sort of feel like you have to, not so much anymore, but at the time felt like you had to divide your personality between the two groups. So like if I was like going to play football, I'd never talk about like playing games and stuff, because at the time everyone was like, oh, you're a massive, well, people say nerd now, but at the time it was geek. Geek was like the more offensive term as growing up. So, oh, you're a geek, you sit at home playing games all day, you need to like, be going out and doing stuff. And I'd have my other friend group where that felt really natural, and we could just all kind of be kind of who we are to a degree. We didn't have to worry about putting on like a bit of a facade, and we just all, I remember going to sort of like LAN parties and stuff, taking my Xbox to a friend's house, which like I remember carrying it in like a backpack, the original Xbox, which was huge, right? It was massive, and I was like a really weedy like little kid. I like, walked like a couple of miles to a friend's house, lugging this in my bag with my, I think I was with my brother and a friend. I remember them sort of like, we were sort of messing around, and I can't remember if someone sort of pushed me or if I just lost my balance, but just like, had this huge backpack on and sort of like just fell back with the Xbox. But obviously, like that thing was like massive and just like built to last, so it made no difference whatsoever. Yeah, I remember going to a friend's house and like, everyone's got those huge like CRT TVs and stuff, dragging them all into the living room and all playing. That was Halo again, playing Halo together. And that always felt like these are my people. Like they're easier to kind of like get along with and just be who you are.
But it sounds, sorry, just quickly, it sounds like the competition thread kind of lead is the connection between those two lives, though. Yeah, like the competition in the multiplayer video games and the competition in football. It sounds like that was a common thread.
Yeah, 100%. So we've spoken before. I still play football now. I love football. Love the competitive side of that. Still have that kind of element of like, if I go to football on a Sunday, I won't talk about like D&D and video games and stuff. But yeah, the competitive side like really really drives me. I hate going to football on a Sunday and it being like, the game's like too easy, and like it's a very one-sided. Like I don't want to do that. I want to be there where it's like really tough and you have to kind of like eke out sort of performance and things like that. So yeah, always been super competitive. Board games, video games, football, everything.
And that's fascinating to me, because I want to pull on that thread just a little bit, because I am the opposite, right? I like competition, but I don't like what it makes me, right? I'm a really bad loser. I'm an only child, very spoiled. So I've always been a bad loser. So I find competition has to be just right. Like if I'm competing with someone who's chill and like doesn't care, and we're just, we're competing, but nobody's trying to beat anyone, I'm fine. But the minute people get like testy, the worst of me comes out. And it feels like you seek that, right? You seek that competition. Both in video games and in football. So as a person, that drive, right, that's something that drives you. You enjoy that. I mean, literally said, right, the conflict, right? You want that tough challenge. Like that's just part of your nature, yeah.
Yeah, and I think over the years I've had to sort of understand that not everyone is like that. Especially like doing board game nights with friends and stuff, like having that kind of mentality of like I have to win this at all costs, and then realizing that no one else is enjoying that. I've had to kind of like rein that in a little bit. The flip side of that is that everyone ends up just like ganging up on me. We will play like a new board game, and everyone's like, our only goal is that Zach doesn't win. So they'll just like prevent that. And then I end up having a bad time. They have a great time. So I had to sort of like temper that over the years. Growing up, it was very much like I didn't have, probably similar to what you were just saying, right? You didn't right like that side of you. I think I didn't recognize that it wasn't that side of me that I didn't like. It was that other people didn't like it, and it was kind of like, oh, he's such like a sore loser and a bad winner as well, like both of them. So I think I've tried to get better at that over time. Video games are very much like one way I can kind of be like that, unleashed by that kind of restraint, especially when playing with kind of like strangers online. I'm not the kind of person who'll have like a microphone on and be sort of like throwing shade at people. But if you're doing it kind of silently, I don't need to rein it in. I can just sort of quietly to myself be happy that I finished off of the leaderboard or whatever. I'm not affecting anyone else by that, or at least I can't see that I'm affecting anyone else. They might be quietly at home thinking, "Oh, I didn't finish top." But yeah.
And where do you think that comes from? I mean, you mentioned kind of competing with your brother, and you know that always that being sort of your first a key memory. So has that always been in you?
Yeah, I think as I've got older, I realized my mum was also super competitive. It's not something that I really like realized growing up. But yeah, she's exactly the same. And I can see that it's come from there. Probably the whole family have got it from there. We'll have like Christmas board game nights, and I'll bring sort of my family, and my wife hates it. Hates all like my mum straight away. She's like, right, let's get all the board games out and let's do something like really competitive and let's all try to win. And Kate's like, I just want to have a good time. I'm not here for that. So, yeah, my mum sort of, I think it comes from that without really realizing. I remember my mum only fairly recently told me that she's never really played games a huge amount, but she recently told me there was a game on the SNES called the Page Master. Based on the film, which is a great film, amazing film. She told me that when I went to school, she'd sit and play that, and there was like one, it was either a coin or a gem or something that she couldn't get, and she spent like hours like trying to get this one thing. She knew where it was, and she just couldn't get it. And I'm like, oh yeah, that's exactly me. And like as games have gotten more advanced and stuff, and you have like achievements and that kind of thing, like that kind of completionist mentality has been something that I've noticed in myself and had to sort of fight against. I think an element of that has kind of ruined games for me a little bit. I recently played Clair Obscur Expedition 33, and I very much had to be like, I'm not gonna check the achievements list. I'm not gonna try and like optimize the game. I just want to enjoy the game for what it is. So yeah, it's definitely something that I've inherited, but I've been able to like identify and use it as a kind of as a tool if I want to kind of like slip into that, right, this is the kind of game where I do want to like achieve everything, I want to 100% it, I can do that, but I can also take a step back and try not to be like that.
Yeah, but it's interesting how that competition manifests not only against other people but against yourself. That you know, if you're playing a single player game, you're still competing but against yourself. That's kind of fascinating. And you mentioned a brother. Is that your only siblings? Do you have other siblings?
Yeah, just the one younger brother is about 3 years younger than me. Yeah, we just grew up sort of playing games all the time together.
Yeah, so that's been a common thread. And so you were sort of keen gamers in the house, and then sounds like you had friend groups, you know, a mixture of friend groups that were gamers or not gamers at all. But and so when you went to, so you mentioned kind of the documentaries on Halo 2 being the sort of trigger that made you realize, oh, video games can be, you know, I could potentially make video games. And that course that you went on, how did that sort of set you up in terms of video game development? Do you feel like you got a good understanding of how games are made through that course?
Honestly, not really. I think the course was still quite new when I joined it. I think it still very much had like a more of a computer science kind of tilt towards it, and a lot of the units were based more on that. I remember having some units that were like on game engine stuff and like rendering, and that was quite useful. But yeah, Lincoln University at the time was a bit of a like the butt of a joke. There was a joke on the in-betweeners about it being like a second-rate education and stuff. It's improved massively since then, but at the time, kind of, I came out and I didn't really feel equipped to go into the games industry. Felt sort of very naive, and I feel like I had like an understanding of certain elements, but not the whole picture by any stretch. I think the elements that I had a interest in were the sort of like the coding side of the things, the units that were focused on programming and engineering and structuring, that kind of stuff. I had like an interest in some of the other units. There were some that were more creative. There was some kind of like level design stuff in Hammer, which was the Steam's engine. There were some other courses that were kind of like, there was a creative studies one that was We had to do some photography in that, and I actually really enjoyed that, but it had like no real bearing on where I thought my career would go. It was like, oh, that was a cool little thing to do, and then let's get back to coding. There was some machine learning stuff. It wasn't machine learning, it was like image processing stuff. But yeah, I wouldn't say that any of it kind of prepared me properly. Like, now that I've spent the past 5 years in the industry, I kind of look back at that and think everything that it taught me then isn't, it's not that it's not irrelevant. There was a lot of kind of foundations, especially in engineering coding, that were really important, but sort of had to extrapolate those into the games industry. I've heard some folks on this podcast from the US speak about like specialist colleges and things that they've gone to that like set you up in a proper way. This very much didn't feel like that.
Yeah, and I think it's probably an era where there are a lot of universities sort of trying to figure out how to get folks ready for games, because it was a, you know, an emerging trend of people wanting to get in. And I guess my question is, had you done much engineering before university? Was that something you were already drawn to?
I've done bits and pieces. So at college, I did a computing course, and I started learning there in like Visual Basic, but it was like really, really, yeah, basic sort of level. I tinkered around in, not in game engines. I tinker around in, there's something called RPG Maker, that I messed around with. I was still in school at that point. I remember I was trying to make a game in that, and it was very much based on like me and like a group of friends. It was like this game we were like going on like a booze cruise, and I was like at school at the time. I don't know why that had like been this thing. It was like, oh yeah, we're gonna like set sail and go to France and do this thing. But I was like really interested in that side of making something myself, and just very simple stuff like, oh, I've got like a sprite on screen and I can make that move around and do things. I had a spell of really getting into kind of like map editors on games. So the Forge system in Halo, loved that. I used to love just making maps that you just like drive around like a warthog and stuff, like races and that kind of stuff, and your own game modes and things like that. Far Cry had a really good map editor that I loved. Spent a long time making like my entire friends group in Football Manager. In the database, Football Manager had like a separate database editor. You can go in, like make all your own players and stuff in there. So I made like a Immingham Town FC, because they didn't have a real football team in the game. So I made Immingham Town FC, and it was like all my friends and stuff in there. None of that was really programming though. It's kind of just like tinkering with existing bits and pieces. It wasn't until college that I started to learn programming properly, and then university sort of developed that further.
Right. Yeah. I mean, that a lot of that map editing stuff and database edit, that's more design than anything in many ways. So it's interesting that when you went to uni, you know, engineering, what was it about engineering that kind of drew you, do you think?
I'm not sure. I think it's just the I think my mum had a friend that was like, this is kind of what you sort of need to be doing. Like, everything's moving towards technology. Coding's gonna be huge in the future. You should do that. So there was a little bit of external sort of, not pressure, external influence guiding me that way. And when I started doing it, I just found it interesting. The fact that there was like loads of different ways of achieving things in lots of different languages and lots of different styles of doing things, all with like an underlying set of principles that have adapted over time. I guess it's similar to what I said about the RPG Maker thing, where you can kind of like, you can have a sprite and move it, getting into like the mechanics of like what's actually happening under the hood to make that move, to make that value increase. What effect does that have on all the other systems around it and stuff? I've always sort of had a bit of a like curious mind, really. Like, when we got our first PC at home, my mum was very sort of like tech averse, so I'd always have to like kind of figure things out and show her things. And I remember just like opening applications and just like digging around all the menus and subsystems and stuff, and just like trying to figure out how things operate, so that then I could then teach it to my mom, who like, this is how you print something, this is how you open a file. But digging into like really low level settings in all of those applications, and usually ended up kind of breaking the family computer. But yeah, I think it's just like an inquisitive mind and wanting to understand how things work that has drawn me to that.
And also sounds like kind of an aptitude for technology, right? Because engineering sort of involves getting into the weeds and understanding how the bones of things work.
Yeah, I think an aptitude for technology is possibly like a symptom of our generation a little bit. So like we grew up like with kind of computers becoming like more common at home and stuff. I guess there was an interest there in using the computer that was maybe all the friends that were into like football and stuff just didn't really care about. I remember trying to get games like Age of Empires or Football Manager working with friends over a network, and having to kind of figure out like, oh, how do you install like a VPN and get that all set up and things like that. I used to quite enjoy figuring all that out and then explaining that to a friend and getting them to sort it out as well. And that was always, to be honest, I absolutely hate networking. I don't know why I enjoyed that at the time.
But I think, I mean, you mentioned LAN parties, and I think, at least for me, I think you hit the nail on the head there, right? That as technology came into the home and became more popular, it was kind of cool to be the person that figured that out and to be able to explain it to your parents, maybe, who weren't as connected to it, or like you say, friends who weren't as connected to it. There was almost like a satisfaction of being the one that knew how to do it, you know?
Yeah, I think also there's an element of just wanting to share that interest with others and having to put in that groundwork for others to then have a easier entry point into that. So yeah, going back to the Halo LAN party, lugging the Xbox across the town is like, I really want to do this thing. I want to have a Halo LAN party. I will walk to you with my Xbox or everything that's all needed. I will set it all up, and then you guys just turn up and play. And we'll have a great time. The same with like the yeah, I will teach you how to install this like VPN and stuff, and then we can get a network game going on Football Manager, because I want to share this like game with you. I want to do it
Yeah,
together.
building frameworks to help other people, be successful and have fun.
Yeah.
Okay, so you go to uni, you've kind of got, a grounding in engineering, and then you move into Blueprint Gaming. Yeah, well, how did that happen? How did that transition happen?
So when I first came out of uni, I had jobs in like I was a waiter at a restaurant for a little bit, and then worked in retail at Game. I had a Christmas job there and just worked there, and it always sort of felt like I was never really going to get an opportunity in the games industry. I applied for Rockstar because they had a QA QA studio in Lincoln, so I applied there and didn't hear anything back. And I very much got into the mindset of, I'm never going to be able to get into the industry unless I move. I don't really want to move, so I'm just kind of going to sit here and just keep working and doing these kind of like labor intensive sort of jobs. And then a friend of mine reached out, who already had a job at Blueprint, and he was like, oh, they're looking for more engineers, are you interested? And I was like, oh great, a programming job, that's exactly what I want. And it was based in a town that was only like half an hour away. So yeah, I turned up to an interview the following Monday, spoke with the manager, and I sort of like prepared my laptop, had all my dissertation and stuff like from uni, and these kind of like prototypes that I'd written up for like these like hack and slash games and things. Sort of sat down with him and showed him it all. I think he just glossed over it all and wasn't interested, and was like, look, it looks like you can code, come in tomorrow, we'll set you off. And I very much thought I was going to be doing like C sharp development and kind of like engine development. And when I turned up, they were like, right, install Flash. So I got that installed, and yeah, had to learn that on the job, Flash, ActionScript. And they made like slot games, online slots and stuff. So that very much at the time didn't feel like it didn't really feel like a foot in the door in the games industry because it was very much not that, but it was like, oh, at least I'm doing engineering. And it felt like there was a lot of pressure to go get a degree and then get a job relevant to that degree. So this was very much that. It was like, I'm putting to use the things that I've spent a lot of money on at university learning to get a job. So yeah, got a job there, was learning Flash, and then that technology sort of evolved over time, and Apple kind of killed Flash off, and that moved to HTML5. That was like a very nascent technology, and it was kind of always adapting, always like learning new frameworks, always learning new sort of like programming techniques and stuff. So it was a really good environment for me. I learned way more there than I did like at university, despite it not really being like real games. I learned a lot about coding and technology. It was quite a low pressure job. There was definitely pressure at times, but there was long periods where it's like we haven't got any sort of major deadlines coming up, and in those times I'd kind of like dig into the engine, and we'd have kind of like features where a designer would want to like have 100 sprites on screen at once, and it would bring the game to a halt, and I'd try to figure out that and made lots of optimizations to the engine and stuff. So it was really good like space for me to grow and learn kind of like from my own, like unguided, just like learn my own way and figure things out. And there was some good experiences there that I learned from.
And I would imagine there were a lot of projects, a lot of different games to work on. Yeah, keep you
Yeah,
busy.
they were churning them out at a really, really high rate. The turnover was ridiculously high. And yeah, it wasn't the most inspiring work. It got to a point where a lot of it was kind of just reskins of the same stuff. But I always tried to make sure that I was embedded on kind of improving the framework and stuff, so that when we had these reskins and things, if they wanted to do something that was more impressive than the previous one, like they had the capacity to do that. Whether that was like increasing the amount of assets that we can use, or introducing things like asset like scaling or particle effects. The turnover was really high. But like I said, it's kind of low pressure for the most part. I think I got to a point where I was like, Zach's been here like 5 6 years. He's been doing a really good job. I was kind of leaving to it, and there was like no pressure on me. I could kind of just do what I want, work on the things that I found interesting. But then that kind of felt a bit like I was getting a bit stale. I felt like I wasn't under enough pressure to produce something, and it felt like I was not really going anywhere. And also, it also wasn't like the environment that I expected it to be and I wanted to be in either. Like I spoke about the Halo videos and seeing everyone like talk about games and stuff, and I kind of assumed that everyone who was a programmer or an engineer would be like into games and nerdy. And I joined this place that was like a gambling firm, and very quickly found out that wasn't the case. Like no one there, it was like the what I said before, like being interested in like either football or games. This was very much on the football side of things, which was still fine. I could still kind of socialize with that group. But from like a career point of view, it was like I was expecting to walk in and see like everyone have like little figurines on the desks and have the desks be like adorned with like gaming like paraphernalia and stuff, and that wasn't the case. So yeah, it was a little bit, it just wasn't the environment I wanted to be in, but it was enough to get me like engineering.
Maybe not the group of people, creative people you're expecting to work with, but the work itself was very fruitful in terms of, and it sounds like you kind of found a niche in, and maybe I'm reaching here, but a niche in extending frameworks, again, making things more useful for folks to be successful.
Yeah, definitely. I remember writing a like a particle system editor for the artists. We the environment there, or like the environment there was very much like designers versus engineers versus artists. It wasn't like a cohesive unit where folks tried to help each other. It was like, oh, the designers have asked us to do this ridiculous thing again that we're never going to achieve, and how are we going to do that? I remember writing like a particle editor for the artists, because they'd make their own systems, they'd pass it to us, and then be like, right, we need you to get this into the game. And our system would be completely different to what they've used to create it. So making like a framework so that what they work the system that they worked in outputted the same things that we then ingested. So it just made that way easier to work. And I really liked kind of like just going into the art room, sitting down with those folks, like, right, what are you guys doing? What would make your lives easier? Instead of having to go back and forth, be like, oh, you've sent us this and it's the wrong size, or it's the wrong like file type and stuff. I really enjoyed that side actually.
Fascinating. So you almost kind of went against the grain then, maybe, of the culture, that you were much more about trying to reach out and understand the asks, and then, facilitate helping people be creative, rather than, like you say, just taking the grenade as it comes over the wall, complaining about it, and then throwing it back, and expecting no complaints back, kind of thing.
A little bit. I think one sort of led to the other, maybe. I think tossing it over one side to the other was the initial sort of route, and it was like, this isn't working, this is just difficult, it's a waste of time, let's see how we can kind of improve this.
Yeah, and that feels like that echoes back to who you are as a person, right? Like wanting to find ways to, help people be successful, and to get them excited about, the thing that they're working on and that you're working on, kind of thing.
Yeah. Reducing friction where possible.
Yeah, definitely. So you were there for a while. You were there for like over 7 years or so.
Yeah, quite a long time.
But then you felt like there was a point where it was getting too stale and you wanted to make a move.
Yeah. And it got to a point where it kind of felt like I was going to be there like forever. I'd kind of settled into it. I'd been there a long time, 7, 8 years, and I didn't still didn't want to move to like a big city or anything. So I was kind of just hoping like an opportunity was going to come up, like a game dev would set up in Lincoln or something. That would kind of be the dream. But someone reached out to me on LinkedIn from a code dev studio. I basically didn't have a LinkedIn profile at the time. It was like the very basic. I created an account and I never ever used it. So because of that, I didn't feel like the message would sort of go anywhere. I got a message from a recruiter, and they sort of asked about what I was interested in, and if I would be interested in like interviewing for some or applying for a role. And I was like, oh, these are like an actual game dev studio. This is like an absolute dream. This is what I want to do. But I tried to temper expectations, and I was like, I'll go through the process. I'll speak to the recruiter, because I've never done this before. I'll speak to the recruiter, I'll kind of set up a CV. I'll go through the interview process, and then whichever process that I kind of fail at, I can then take learnings from that. If I don't get past the CV process, I can be like, right, that needs like scrubbing up. Or if I fail like at the interview process, and kind of reflect on that. And it went all the way through. I ended up getting the job, and I was like, oh, I've got it, now what? And then, yeah, started at a code dev studio. So they were based in Nottingham, and they offered me like a hybrid opportunity. That still wasn't kind of like the norm at the time, because this was like pre-COVID. So I had a hybrid opportunities of doing 3 days in the office, 2 days at home with an hour commute. I took a little bit of a pay cut to do it, because I was like, this I don't care about the work I'm doing now. I want to get into the industry, and if taking a pay cut gets me into the industry, gets my foot in the door, then I will do it. That's not the money isn't the important thing here. So yeah, took that opportunity, and yeah, that's the company that I've been at for the past 6 years now.
Right. Okay. So that was, it's kind of fascinating that that connection happened then. You'd almost been doing nothing to sort of warrant it, really, right? You see a sort of minimal LinkedIn presence and not actively looking, yet somebody, found your what you had on LinkedIn interesting enough to reach out, and that turned out to be the right role.
Yeah, and I think as like many engineers do, I've suffered with like imposter syndrome a lot, and I always sort of looked at that from a point of view of like it was just like really lucky, like right place, right time, the Codev studio were like really new at the time, maybe only had about 20, 30 staff. I sort of look at it and think, oh, if they were trying to hire me from the position they're in now, and now it's the position I was in then, maybe they wouldn't have looked at me because they're a lot bigger now. But I've sort of, I've heard that like using luck as an excuse is like something quite common with like imposter syndrome. So I tried to look at it through. There's a really good quote that's like luck is when opportunity meets preparedness, and I try to look at it through that lens. I was prepared for that switch at the time, and the opportunity came up. So that was the, you can call it luck, but the luck was because of those things. Still very like grateful, very fortunate that that came about and got me into the industry. But yeah, I wasn't like putting feelers out there or like applying for things. It was very much it came to me, and yeah, got lucky.
That's great. And so all the while you were at Blueprint, even though it was a form of gaming, even if not maybe the form of gaming you were the most passionate about, but you were still a gamer, throughout that period, still avidly playing. So I imagine when, the Multiplayer Group MPG came knocking, and like you said, they were an actual games company, like a traditional games company, you were like, this is the perfect combination.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, still a massive gamer. Always have been playing constantly. And I didn't really fully understand that the studio was like a codev studio when they reached out to me. I kind of didn't care because it just felt like it's a gaming studio. Like it doesn't matter what they're doing. If it's gaming that I kind of want to get my foot in the door, even if it was like a stepping stone to another studio or something. Yeah, that felt a lot more like the environment that I wanted to be in, that I was hoping for at Blueprint. That wasn't the case. When I started at MPG, it was very much a case of like, these are like the people that I want to be around. These are like, I don't have to kind of put on a facade of like, oh yeah, don't talk about those interests, talk about these interests. Everyone was kind of like, yeah, what games are you playing at the minute? And it wasn't like a very high level, oh yeah, I play FIFA and Call of Duty. It was like, we play these really interesting games that are either really niche or just way more interesting. And yeah, it felt like, not that I was really hiding before, but it felt like I didn't have to, kind of put on a different personality anymore.
Well, like you said, if Blueprint was kind of one side of your friend group, then MPG was very much the place you felt at home.
Yeah, absolutely. And as they kind of got bigger and bigger, because when we first joined the office, it was tiny. But as they got bigger and bigger, the studio started to become more like that, like the Bungie studio, right? Where you've got all the knickknacks and things all over the desks and stuff, and an arcade cabinet in the corner that people can play on, and just like props around the office, like controllers on the wall and posters and things. And it was like, this is the environment that I want to be in.
Yeah, I can imagine that was sort of the dream realized. Did you ever think back to those kind of Halo documentaries at the time and think like it's finally happened?
A little bit, yeah. Like it's something that has like a, it's like a sort of really core memory, like an inflection point. Like I remember that really vividly, when I got that disc. It kind of didn't feel like I'd made it yet, but it felt very much like it was on the way, like on the right path finally, and it was
Yeah,
like getting closer and closer.
that's cool. And so at MVG, various sort of software engineer roles in that codev environment, which is a really kind of interesting, slightly more modern. I mean, not entirely unique to modern, but a more commonly modern approach now of being sort of a support studio for another studio's project, but often having quite large responsibilities, like kind of large pieces of the game you're working on. So how did the work at MPG kind of relate to the work at Blueprint? Was it similar? Did you kind of continue a similar track, or did it shift?
It was a little bit different because it's like working for clients. It's kind of more, I couldn't just like sit there with no pressure and be like, I'm just going to tinker with the engine and like figure out what's going on. It's very much you have client demands and they expect certain things. So it was different in that way. The first project that I was on, sort of helped me to like develop my experience of like C and C++ again, because I'd not used that. Like I joined Blueprint, it's like, right, learn Flash, which is like a dying technology at the time. So yeah, my first project I got to work on, it was kind of like Cortec libraries, and kind of gave me like, it kind of reset my understanding of those languages, because it had been quite a long time since I'd been at uni and stuff. I'd forgotten, not forgotten, but like that was way at the back of my mind. And the level at which it was used at uni was completely different to the level it was used in the industry. So that first year was like really good to kind of get me back up to scratch, but it still wasn't really what I wanted to be doing, because it was kind of like a core tech. It was almost like a publisher level sort of thing. I kind of spoke to my lead and I was like, if an opportunity comes up to work on like an actual game, that's what I want to, that's what I want to do. And at that point I realized that that was possible at that company, because it's code dev, they have a lot of projects going on all at the same time, all at sort of like different levels. So like I said, that one was kind of like core tech. Some of them were like a lot closer to early development of a title, like working with like the designers and stuff. Some of it was purely right, we're working on like a networking module because this studio doesn't have a great experience with networking, so we'll do that. So yeah, then got the opportunity to work on like a real title that was like dream to work on. And I was like, yeah, sign me up straight away. So I moved across to that.
And at least the work that I remember us doing together, Zach, it was that role of kind of building things to help people be successful and, you know, to enable people to be creative felt very much, that's what I remember you doing so well. So was that on that big project, you know, on the game project, was that what you started doing? And were you kind of drawn to that?
Yeah, because that was it was still quite nascent and there was a lot of work to do on like building the foundations and stuff. Yeah, it fed very much into that kind of, right, let's figure out what all the requirements are for folks. It wasn't we couldn't kind of take a robust existing mature system and be like, right, where are the pain points here? Where's the friction? Where can we improve, get minor improvements? It was like that on steroids. It was like, right, we have nothing. What do you want to do? How can we make it easier? Or how can we make it at all? Like there wasn't a lot of times there wasn't anything there at all. So it's how do we build it from scratch, which was a different skill really. Sometimes it's easier to look at something that you already have and see where the difficulties already are. It's a lot harder to just make something that doesn't exist and just put it out there. So that was another huge learning curve, figuring out. We spoke about like being like a completionist. A lot of the time, I'm quite a perfectionist as well, especially with like coding. And you can't really be that. A lot of the time, you have to just, you can't come to a full solution before you understand the whole picture. You kind of have to just try something, see what works, get feedback from folks, go back and forth, and then come to a solution that's kind of iterated over time, rather than being like, right, I'm going to build this system. I'm going to get all the requirements up front and just build it from scratch. You can't really do that. So yeah, it definitely like it was a slightly different skill to like taking existing things and reducing the friction. It was yeah, like I said, that what ramped up to 11.
Yeah, I guess almost the polar opposite of, you know, it sounds like to the latter period of Blueprint, you were, like you said, kind of looking at an existing thing and trying to figure out how to make it better. Whereas on the, you know, on the project you're building from scratch, the end result is the same. You're trying to help people be more successful, but you're doing it from the opposite angle of like, oh, there's nothing to look at, so we've got to invent it. And you mentioned like enjoying the looking at achievement lists and trying to optimize your play style. Like in many ways that is the opposite of what, you know, what you said we have to, you had to do and we had to do on, you know, on a project, a nascent project.
Very much. Yeah, I sometimes find that a little bit of a negative thing. Like I said before, I try not to do that. I'm very much the kind of player that's like, oh, in Destiny, you've got these three quests, and one of them's to get void kills, one's to get plasma weapon kills, wants to get sniper kills. It's like, right, I'm going to equip a void plasma sniper, and I'm going to get all those things done as quickly and as efficiently as possible. And that's, yeah, what you want to do when you're writing a system or building something. You want to do it as efficiently as possible, as optimized as possible. And sometimes you can't do that because not all of the requirements are visible from the start. Sometimes you don't realize what the requirements are until you start building the thing. So yeah, I sort of had to fight against that a little bit. Sometimes it's a case of not just you as an engineer doesn't know the requirements. Sometimes everyone doesn't know the
Sometimes a dumb
requirements.
designer doesn't know.
Yeah, so when we were in Blueprint, and we sort of had this like designers versus engineers thing, we had a saying that was like, designers don't know what they want until they've seen what they don't want. And I thought that was like a very negative thing at the time, and it's only sort of now that I realized that, yeah, that's completely like understandable. That makes sense. Like, sometimes you're not going to understand everything until you see something that you don't want. And then sometimes knowing what you don't want helps you come to realize what you do want.
Yeah, it's the ethos of fail fast, isn't it? Fail fast basically means you figure out a lot of things you don't want, and then eventually you're like, oh, this is the right one. Yeah, interesting. So it sounds like there's sort of almost an internal struggle there between who you are as a person and, sometimes the work that you have to do, which is kind of the polar opposite of how maybe you like to function.
I think speaking to other more experienced engineers, you kind of they're really helpful in kind of saying, like, teaching you these things that you kind of want to go like with your instincts, and you want to I want to finish a system completely. I want to write the whole thing from scratch. I don't want to kind of submit work that feels like unfinished. And then, yeah, speaking to more experienced engineers, they say that exact sort of thing. It's like, just get something done. It doesn't matter if it's finished. Just get something like a foundation there. And once we can see that foundation, then it gets easier to kind of build upon that rather than trying to build the whole thing in one go.
Has that been a struggle to adapt to, Zach? Because that does feel like that kind of runs contrary to your sort of DNA.
A little bit, yeah. I sort of have to force myself into that thinking, because there'll be times I'll be sat trying to solve an engineering problem, and I'll just kind of be sat there for kind of hours thinking and thinking and thinking. And it's not until you kind of just start writing some code that some of the thoughts that you had hours ago just kind of go away. It's like, well, yeah, well, that's obviously not going to work because of XYZ, and you only see that once you start putting stuff out. But it's hard to, yeah, you have to kind of fight past that a lot of the time. My instinct is still to, I'm going to sit here and try and figure it out. And then I kind of get like anxiety. I'm like, I've spent too long like thinking about this. I need to like produce something. And then once that anxiety kicks in, it's like, oh, just do that thing that everyone says where you just write something and then figure it out.
Yeah, and it's interesting how, engineering design are very similar in that way, right? Like designers can spend way too long pontificating on paper when actually you put something in game and you figure it out in an afternoon. But it does feel like engineers, and maybe this is unfair, but it does feel like some engineers fundamentally as people, right? That's what code is, right? You want to write great code, you want to write clean code, you want to write fast code, and that usually involves sort of doing it right, and sort of it's an anathema to kind of do it badly, right? Just get it in, do it badly, and then improve it later. That almost feels like the opposite of what you want to do.
Yeah, and I think imposter syndrome like feeds into that massively, especially like when you're working in an environment where you're submitting code to be reviewed by people who are more experienced than you. You kind of want to get everything in a state where it's like, if someone looks at it, they're going to be impressed by it. I don't want to submit something where someone looks at it and picks it all apart. And as you kind of got more experience, you just learned that when you put something up like that, you say, you fill your code with like to-dos, like, I know this isn't the correct solution, but this is going to be improved later. And that's okay. Like, senior devs are okay with that. It's not like an acceptance of like inferiority or anything. It's just, we don't know the full requirements for this thing right now. We'll figure it out later, and that's fine. But yeah, imposter syndrome sort of hugely feeds into that, especially because when I joined MPG, I'd just come from Blueprint, who had been doing HTML5 and JavaScript for years and years and years, and JavaScript's kind of like a butt of the joke sort of language. Feels very much like, in comparison to C++, which is like industry standard, it feels like, oh, if you only know JavaScript, then you're not an engineer sort of thing. That's how it felt to me. even though you have like sort of core foundations of like what good code should be, that kind of is language agnostic, it still feels inferior. So I always kind of felt like I was proving myself in that regard, which just feeds into that, right, I need to make this thing perfect before I submit it for someone to look at.
And is the competition element also fuel to that as well?
I think so. I think like a lot of that competition with self is trying to make things, make yourself like better and better and better. I think that in engineering, especially with C++, you're kind of like learning like new things all the time, and you always want to like improve on your implementations of things. You look at often as an engineer, you look at code you've written years ago, and you're like, why did I do that? That's awful. That makes no sense. And you want to rip the whole thing up and start again. And it's just, yeah, engineering is almost like a constant competition with yourself as like self-improvement. Yeah, and when someone else has their eyes on it, it kind of feeds into that, like, because someone else can see it. When you're writing your own things and hobby things, it doesn't matter as much, but as soon as someone sees it, it's like, this is a representation of me, and I want that representation to be as best as it can be.
Yeah, and I can relate to that. I mean, as a pro, when you're prototyping or trying to build something, right, sometimes there's that competition element of being able to bend the thing to do something that people are like, how on earth did you do that? I'm like, yeah, I figured it out. Like there's a little bit, it can be a little bit of that kind of competition element just in general about making stuff. But it's fact, having worked with you for, multiple years, competition is clearly a very key part of who you are as a person, but it never came across as like that. Some people that are really competitive are like grossly competitive in everything, right? They'll compete in whatever possible thing they can compete in, and it sort of, to your point, becomes frustrating for everyone else. So like, oh, just let that person win. And that never came across to me in your sort of in our professional, sort of working together to build something. It never came across as that sort of, toxic in any way.
Yeah, I think it's sort of the element that you sort of described of like wanting to help others and reduce friction kind of runs like completely perpendicular to that competitiveness. Like if it was a competitive drive, I'd be like, well, no, you should be able to work with this thing that's like has like high friction. I can do it. Why can't you do it? Like that must mean that I'm better than you. But yeah, in a work environment, it's always been about reducing that friction, which I think if I was playing a board game or something with someone, I'd be trying to increase the friction for someone else as much as possible. So yeah, maybe it's not something that really manifests as much in work.
That's a fascinating point, though, that sort of internal dichotomy within you sort of creates the perfect recipe, right? Of sort of having the drive to make things better and and to keep getting better, but also heavily tempered with the, but the empathy of trying to help other people be successful. That's a interesting, manifest in a very positive way.
Yeah, I'm not really sure how the two can kind of coexist because they don't really seem compatible. Yeah, I think what I described before of like learning how my competitiveness like appears to others, that probably has helped in a like a work sense of like not appearing. Because you get some engineers that are like, my code is like better than everyone else's and we have to do things my way. I think maybe the imposter syndrome helps with that because I'm very much like, well, my code can't possibly be the best because there's all these people out there that are like way more experienced than me and stuff. I think maybe a good way to put it would be the competitiveness comes in when it's something that I know I'm really good at, and I tend to be. My brother and I are both these kind of people where we can pick up a game that we've never played before and kind of immediately grasp the rules and reach like a. An above average kind of like level quite quickly, and that just feeds into that competitiveness because you immediately sort of like beat other people around you, and then you want to beat the next person, the next person, the next person. Because I'm quite critical of myself in a career aspect, I don't feel like I'm at that level, like I'm at that above average level, so it's still kind of like catching up, and that competitiveness doesn't kind of manifest itself as much.
Yeah, that's interesting. So, as we sort of wind this down, a couple of closing questions. How has being a developer changed you as a gamer?
I don't think that much, to be honest. I think I am very much a like developer sympathizer, I think is the biggest thing. Like if I play games with friends and they're sort of like picking apart reasons why things could be better, or they don't understand why devs have made a certain decision, I very much take the angle of like, well, if you look at this system and this system, like they had to do it this way because of this, or they might not have had the resources to do it, or it might be a creative decision why they've done it. So very much like sympathize from that point of view. Or had lots of discussions with friends about like the door problem in video games, and it's like one tiny simple thing has so many decisions involved in it that you kind of don't really appreciate the amount of work that goes into creating games and the amount of decisions that get made for every single tiny little aspect that sometimes things can seem to someone else like they don't make sense, but there's loads of reasons why they've come to that decision. And like I said, sometimes it's creative, sometimes it's limitations in an engine, sometimes it's resourcing. You don't have the kind of manpower to be able to commit time to that sort of thing. So yeah, very much a sympathizer in terms of that. There's definitely been occasions where I've picked up a game and had no sympathy. I've like started playing it and been like, I don't understand why, how they've possibly come to this decision. And that's kind of like ruined it for me a little bit. I like to, when I play, I have to try and sort of distance myself from like analyzing games too much. Sometimes it's like a really interesting, like fun activity to do. Other times it kind of like breaks the fourth wall and a little bit and kind of like peeks behind the curtain. I've been playing Ball Pit recently, and that has like this kind of progression where there's like an AI element to it, and sort of like watching that and being like, oh, well, why has the AI done this thing? Or why hasn't it done that thing? If I was playing, that would be the decision I've made. So how have they programmed it to sort of like factor that decision over that decision? And find that really interesting. But yeah, I try as much as I can to distance it.
Yeah, and like you sort of mentioned already that you've tried to distance the self-competition, from the way you play sometimes, and that feels like that reflects a little bit on the stuff we just talked about professionally. What about how has being a developer changed you as a human?
I think I've become more like introspective. I think like we've just spoken about the imposter syndrome stuff before. That's something that I kind of really struggled with to start with. And just being in an environment with other engineers, like knowing that it's something that a huge percentage of engineers go through, has been really helpful, and it's made me really reflective on myself, my own sort of flaw seems like a bit of a strong word, but my own sort of like maybe weaknesses in development and stuff, and that kind of manifests itself both in engineering and in general life as well. I mean, a friend of mine will tell you that I'm still extremely critical of myself, like when we play football together, and like focus on the tiny mistake that happened instead of like the two or three good things that happened. But I think that's just kind of part of who I am. I think being in the industry has helped me be more reflective on it and accept that it's part of who I am, and not it's not necessarily a flaw. It's not a weakness. It's just I have that thing, and I need to just deal with it. And knowing about it and understanding it helps a lot more.
Yeah, and I think being in the industry, working with other people, being critical to certain parts of the, the process or the development can help you temper some of those more self-critical. I have the same, the same self-critique in me, and yeah, I think you sort of get used to going, maybe, we can get through it. It's not the end of the world, and moving on. Cool. And then last question, like, how does your family relate to your job?
So my mum was very much like, when I was going to college, she was like, you need to get like a real job. You can't be a game dev. That's not a thing. You need to be like a plumber or get like a trade or something, which in hindsight might not be the worst idea with the way the industry's going. But yeah, she kind of never believed that it could be possible, and she just wanted the best for me. She wanted me to, she didn't want me to go down a route that wasn't possible. And maybe that fed into me kind of thinking that it wasn't possible as well. But now that I'm in the industry, she's super supportive of it, and she's like really proud as well, even if she doesn't really understand what I'm doing. She's proud that like I'm happy and successful doing what I'm doing, and I'm able to kind of like keep a roof over my head and all that kind of stuff. Yeah, my stepdad has no idea what, I don't think he's ever played a video game in his life. But yeah, he's proud as well. My wife is as well, super proud of what I'm doing, really supportive. Absolutely loves it. She, again, very much not a gamer. We tried playing It Takes Two, yeah, the co-op game, and it's like, speaking about the kind of competitive side of things, I have to sort of like really like rein that in and like play it like the lowest sort of like level and like try and like accommodate, and she just doesn't enjoy it. no matter how much I try, it's too much. But she appreciates that I get a lot out of it, and it's what I'm passionate about, and it's what I've always wanted to do.
Yeah, and your two daughters will presumably, enjoy video games and will hopefully get to play something you work on down the road, maybe.
Yes, hopefully. Yes, that is kind of, yeah, the dream. I speak to my eldest daughter sometimes. We were playing like a demo yesterday on Steam, and talking about, it's like a really like independent, like one, I sent solo dev thing, and I was kind of saying to her, this is what I want to do. I want to make my own game and release it and have you play it and stuff. And she's not quite at an age where she kind of really understands it yet, but she likes playing them. And I think as she gets older, she'll have a better appreciation of like, oh, this is what daddy does. Like, hopefully kind of like explain that to like her friends and things, and maybe they'll find it cool.
Yeah, love that. Well, thanks, Zach. It's been a great journey. I love the just those points about internal dichotomy and kind of who you are as a person and how that manifests in what you do. I found very fascinating. I mean, that's the core of what this podcast is all about. So I appreciate you opening up about those things and thank you for your time.
Yeah, thanks, man. Thanks for having me. I really enjoyed it.